Morning. First congressional district candidate.
Yeah.
Not the first candidate, but the first congressional district.
The only candidate for on the Democratic side.
So. Yeah, there you go. Okay.
Monica Trell, good morning.
Hey, Monica.
Good morning.
I look awful bright and spry for a woman who's been all over the state again and again.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, the minivan is going strong, although I did have to... I took my snow tires off, and so... Sure enough, it snowed.
Of course.
So.
Well,
it happens every time.
Yeah, I know.
How many miles on the van now?
We're at over 180. We're around 182 now after the last week. Okay. So, yeah.
You still got, 7 months to go?
Yeah, over 30,000 for this cycle alone.
Well,
yeah.
One thing you don't have to worry about is primary.
Right. So the primary cycle is the filing period is over, and I'm the only Democratic candidate in the congressional race. So
that kind of frees you up a little bit, doesn't it?
It does. And, you know, honestly, since I got back in and decided to run again, it's really more about representing everyone and trying to reach out and connect with all those folks in the middle who feel invisible, who don't feel heard. Not coming at this from a partisan angle, but really being able to talk to everybody, saying, what do you want? What do you want in a representative?
Do you find it a little friendlier this time than it did the last time?
It's different. I don't know if friendlier. I've certainly had some, contentious meetings where, I would say people are angry and mad. They're mad about property taxes. They're mad about high prices. And they're really, really, really mad about housing. And so I'm not sure I would say it's friendlier. I think people are really...
They're passionate, though, about these issues. Huh?
They're really close to the bone. People are getting hit close to home, close to the bone. And it's hitting people hard. And, people want to be heard. And they want answers. They want solutions.
Well, I guess what I meant by friendlier, I heard some stories about how you encountered some things at some of the parades last time you ran where people were just downright rude and nasty.
Yeah, so I think that those personal partisan attacks aren't there so much.
Yeah.
I think what I'm describing, so correct, I think that in terms of this is personal, that's not there. What I'm experiencing and seeing and feeling is... People are not feeling heard, and they're angry about that, as they should be, and we need to change it. That's why I'm running.
Okay.
Let's talk about the housing situation here, because it seems like the only solution we seem to have is, let's build more houses, let's build more condos, let's build more apartments.
Right.
Is that the only way out we have?
So certainly the way to get more roofs over more people's heads is supply, right?
Mm-hmm.
But do we have enough existing structures to put a roof over people's heads? That's a question. So the answer looks different in different places. In Bozeman, in Gallatin County, there are enough second homes, I've heard this statistic, to put a roof over the heads of everybody who doesn't have a house.
We're talking about second homes from people who live out of state.
Right. And so you see that pattern here in the Flathead. You see that in Gallatin. You see that Missoula in the Sealy Swan. I met with the Pyramid Lumber people, and they said, if you work at a mill, you can't afford to buy a house in the Sealy Swan area. Mm-hmm. So supply, but who owns it? How much does it cost? And can you even get into that market? So building more is the answer, but the caveat and the kicker there is at what cost? So in Ravalli County, they're saying we can't build a house for less than $500,000 because the lot is now $250,000. So once you get the structure up, you're not going to sell it for less than $500,000. So building more isn't the answer if the end cost is going to be $500,000. That's not the kind of house we need right now. We need $100,000 houses. We need $200,000 houses. We need places for people to live that they can afford. And if you're making $25, $30, $35, $40 bucks an hour, you ought to be able to buy a house to live in Western Montana. And those houses don't exist. So... solutions aren't necessarily just build more, more, more. It's how do you incentivize opening up that supply? So interest rates are an issue. and maybe removing the mortgage deduction for a second home, maybe imposing things like if you don't live in your house for 6 months out of the year, then you have to pay some kind of fee for that. Like if you're going to just have a structure sitting in Montana empty, that there should be some cost to that.
Well, we have people up in Whitefish, out of state people who own large homes, and they have caretakers that live in that home year round. So they can say, hey, you know, we're part of the solution.
Well, so if there's somebody in Montana who has a place to live, who has a roof over their heads and has a house for, you know, that they can call home, then, you know, that is a reasonable approach, right? Mm-hmm. We're trying to get people into structures where they have a place to call home.
The other thing that's happening to us here in Kalispell is we have some corporations that have come up and bought a whole bunch of our traditional neighborhood homes, and they're turning into Airbnbs.
Playground for the rich. Let's change that. That's not right. Yeah. So, I mean, and that's about money and profit, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's happening with trailer parks. You see, you know, these investor-owned corporate entities buying up these trailer parks and giving people 30 days notice. You're out. And then what do? Then they own this really fabulously expensive land all of a sudden in the middle of our urban areas. We need to address this. If we want Montana to have families in it that are sending in their kids to our schools, we have to address these.
So how do we address this?
Well, I think some of those things, Airbnbs, where you're having those kinds of corporate profits, you have to make that cost more than it's worth to do, right? So, you know, if it's a follow the money kind of a game, then let's make it more expensive to own something like that than it's you're going to get profit out of it, and incentivize families to be able to live here.
Okay, now it sounds like you're talking about a tax structure, and it's interesting because everybody goes, oh, I know I don't like taxes, but we all pay them, and so it doesn't matter whether you're a Republican, a Democrat, an independent, you're paying taxes. What are you getting for the money that you spend becomes the issue. And, you know, the governor was in the other day, and he mentioned something about homesteading maybe being a relief on mm-hmm. property tax. But the other thing is, as far as the tax structure, it doesn't seem to be working as far as middle income, lower income people go.
Right.
And yet if companies and upper income are paying more, particularly companies, they say the only way they would be able to shelter the money is by investing in employees and capital improvements and expanding business. And that was true during the Eisenhower years. Yep. Would that work again now, I wonder?
Right. And the Eisenhower years, the top rate structure was 91%, right? Not a lot of people paid that. Not a lot of corporate entities paid that. But that was the top rate structure in the Eisenhower years, a Republican.
You know, I want to make real sure here. I don't want to confuse the property tax situation with other things because
right.
in your world, in Congress, you don't collect property taxes.
Right. And what yeah. Robin is asking is, you know, about taxes. I will say, we don't all pay taxes the same. So anybody
but we
who,
pay taxes is the point.
Well, workers pay taxes on mm-hmm. income. So if you have a job waiting tables here, if you're a nurse, if you're over there at the, you know, the city building, if you're in private business, if you're working for, you know, any kind of a private small business here, and the small business owners, you're paying taxes on dollar one of your income. That's reality. And mm-hmm. you're paying at a way higher level than these corporate entities who are paying 1,000 billionaires right now in the country. Guess what their average tax payment is? 8%.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a worker, you're a small business owner here, you're paying way more. So we're not all paying taxes the same.
Right.
And we all do need to pay our fair share.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
large corporate entities who have seen the benefits from American capitalism, they need to pay into it in the same way that we do in our jobs.
Well, the big thing, we tried yesterday to impeach our Secretary of Homeland Security, And that failed. But nonetheless, we still have a problem at the border, and not just the southern border.
So I actually crossed the northern border. I went into Canada and I asked the Canadian side of it, what do you see? What's the problem on the border here? And you know what they said? Meth coming across from the U.S. But
meth coming across from the U.S.
into Canada. That's their problem. I asked the U.S. Border Patrol agents, what are you seeing? And, you know, they said, we can't talk about that. So that's fine. I didn't get any information there. But we have a bill right now. We have to secure the border, period. We have to secure the border, and we have to get fentanyl out of our communities. Two separate issues, by the way. Let's not conflate them. But there is a bill right now that the U.S. House could vote on. The Senate passed it. It would stop fentanyl. It would get it out of our communities. It's a good bill, especially on fentanyl, which is a huge problem. I was in Glacier County yesterday. They're dealing with it. They need it addressed. There is a bill. I would vote on that bill, and we would have a secure border, and we would have fentanyl getting addressed today. If I were in Congress, we would be voting on that. I would vote for it, and we would have that law, and we would be able to implement something. The Border Patrol agents all support that bill. And my opponent is playing games and holding this issue, holding us hostage, playing games, making our lives more dangerous so that he has a campaign issue. That is bullshit.
Oops. All right.
Snuck through there.
All right, but his argument is that Mayorkas already has all the power he needs to do all this. Does he?
Congress can act. It needs to act. We need a functional legislative branch of government. That is their job. Look at how many vacations they've taken since January. They've
been
on
vacation
more
than they've been at
work. Yeah. What the hell? We all need to go. Sorry, guys, but you know, get to work and do your damn job. So, you know, Congress need to sit down. This is the least productive Congress in our history. The most chaotic. That took them 6 months to pass a budget, longer than, you know, it should. And they can't get a speaker. This is ridiculous. We need our legislative branch of government to be functional, to do their job, to pass bills, to you know, make laws. They can do this. That's their job. Don't kick that can down the road and blame it on somebody else. Look in the mirror, sit down, get the work done. That's what their job is, and they need to do it.
Yeah, they don't even get to the debate portion.
Well, the fascinating thing, we were talking with John Tester yesterday morning, and he said, you know, he's the chairman of the Senate Appropriations Defense Appropriations Subcommittee. He says, I had my budget out all done back in June.
Yep. And what's wrong with these people? Yeah. They need to sit down and do their job. They know what their job is. They should be talking about, they have the budget in front of them now for this, you know, for the next year. And what are we going to get to September and they're not going to be able to pass it again? I mean, so they know what their work is. There's a bill in front of them that they can vote on and pass, bring it to the floor, vote on it, up or down. That's your work. Do it. Stop going on vacation. I think they're working now. They're like working one day and taking like 4 weeks off. I mean, I think that's the calculation that I'm seeing.
Well, the thing that they're trying to avoid is in an election year is taking a vote that could cause some trouble back home.
Well, that's their job, to take votes and to do work. Mm-hmm. And here at home, what I'm hearing across this district, people are tired of the chaos and they're tired of the dysfunction. They want, you know, we have to come together. We have to come to the middle. Does that require some compromise? Is everybody going to get everything they want? Maybe not. But we do need to secure the border. We need to get fentanyl out of our communities. We need to address the housing crisis. I'm doing that on the ground every day, talking to folks, saying, what are the answers? What are the ways that this will work in our community? I will be ready to go on day one, and I will work hard.
Let's just to clarify here. You say that you would have voted for that bill.
The immigration bill. Right. It was called a couple of different things.
Right.
The appropriation,
but you would have voted for it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a bipartisan.
It was. It was written by Republicans.
But the Speaker of the House refused to even put it on the floor, and so you couldn't have voted for it. They wouldn't have let you.
Well, I would have said, let's put that on the floor and let's put it to a vote. I don't hear my opponent calling for that. He's ducking it, avoiding it, and not doing his job.
I wish we had more time. We're running out here.
Yeah.
Monica, thank you so much for being so straightforward with us this morning, even with the little words that got through us.
Sorry. Always happy to be here. Thanks, John.
Thanks so
Robin.
Much.
Yep.